As I said earlier this morning, I'm so pleased to have Carol Cresswell with us to share the vision and the heart that she has for the spirituality of children, reminding us that it is our spirituality as well. And the opportunity to invest in children, to engage with these stories of our faith with them, is also an opportunity to engage with our own spirit. So, Carol, thank you so much for being here and sharing with us.
Thank you, Jenny. Good morning. It really is a gift to be here in this community. I first came, I think it's been around 10 years ago when Rula was here, and Rula invited me to begin helping this community understand a program that I work with called Godly Play. And I've been back, I think, probably about a half a dozen times to participate in the growth of that program. I've always been impressed with this community, and the word that comes to me is vitality. There's a vitality and an authenticity here that has always been a real gift to be a witness of and to participate in. So thank you for the invitation again this morning to be with you. I do want to talk to you a little bit about children's spirituality this morning. And then I also want to just tell you one of these, as Jenny referred to them, these ancestral stories of Abraham and Sarah, a story that multiple religions have used for thousands of years to make sense out of our own story and to understand ourselves and our own journey. As Jenny reminded us this morning, Jesus, although not having many opportunities where he talked about children, did several times reference children. And I think it behooves us regularly to remind ourselves of what Jesus said. One of the scriptures that Jenny reminded us of this morning is Jesus said, unless you figure out something about what it means to be a child, you, as adults, cannot even enter. You can't even get your toe in the door of whatever this kingdom of God is all about. And as much as I know that we care deeply about children, I really believe that in the church we have work to do around children's spirituality, similar to the work that's been done around women's spirituality. And as we look back 100, 200 years about the journey that women have made and how they've come into their own and their voice is equally recognized, I think we have that very similar work to do in many ways around children. Yes, we take care of children and we do the best that we can, but I don't know that we deeply and really understand that Jesus said, they are your teachers. Biologically, I like to say, adults produce children. But spiritually, children produce adults. And I believe that we have much still room to grow in and to deeply understanding what that's about. I don't know who to attribute this story to. I know Parker Palmer. I know Frederick Buechner uses this story. But it so embodies what I believe really is at the heart of Godly Play and good understanding of children's spirituality. A family were expecting their second child. And when they brought the new baby home, the older sibling insisted on having time alone with the new baby. They were a little concerned. You know, you hear about sibling rival jealousy and what's up. But the older child insisted that they have time alone with the new baby. So they had a good monitor. They put the baby's bassinet by the monitor and walked out in the hall where the other part of the monitor was. They could hear the older child walk across the floor to where the new baby was and say to the baby, tell me about God. I've almost forgotten. It embodies what I really do believe, that children come with such a deep connection to God. And I think we all know that on some level. We sometimes have journeyed far away from that. And I think Jesus, when he talks about being born again, I don't know that it has so much to do with about getting a ticket to populate heaven as it does really coming back to a second naivete. What we really propose in Godly Play is that what children need is a language to be able to talk about that innate knowing of God. And story and play are some of the language that we believe children really need to be able to experience and to have a way to talk about God. The best way that I know how to tell you about Godly Play is to really just let you experience it. So that's what I'm going to do this morning. I think there's really a vision here in this community for that spacious Christianity not only being for adults, but also for children and youth. And godly play, I think, is a way that possibly can meld with your passion and your journey to do that. So what I'd like to invite us to do, and I really want you to invite you as adults, not to pretend to be children, but to really, really experience this story as adults, and to hear this story the way that we do in godly play. We really do believe that it's not my job to make connections for people with this story, to tell them what it means or what they're supposed to get out of it, but simply to provide access with an economy of words and an economy of gestures to this ancient story that people have used for thousands of years. So, we always say in godly play that we have to have a piece of the desert because so many important things happened in the desert, and we need to have at least a piece of it. And as Jenny mentioned this morning too, we pay a lot of attention about getting ready. So again, would you join me just for a moment of silence to get ready to hear this story? Amen. The desert can often be a very dangerous place. There's very little food and there's very little water. People die without food and without water. The winds blow and changes the shape of things, and it's easy to lose one's way. It takes a lot of courage to go into the desert. This story takes place after the great flood, when the creatures came off the ark and went into the world and began to fill it up with life again. They gathered by the rivers that gave them water to drink and watered their crops. Those gatherings grew from small villages to towns and even large cities. One of the oldest and most ancient of those cities was the city of Ur. And in the city of Ur, people believed that the world was full of gods. There was a god for the sun, a god for water, a god for the land, for feelings. It was their way of saying that all of life was holy. But there was one family that believed there was one God and that all of God was in every place. They didn't know that yet, but that's what they believed. Abram and Sarai were a part of that family. And when Abram's father decided to go to a new land, Abram and Sarai went with them, wondering if God would be in that new place. They took all of their belongings, their animals, the old people, the children. By day they followed the great river Euphrates that showed them the way and gave them water. And at night they slept in tents. It was a very long journey. Finally, they began to meet people coming out of the city of Haran, and they knew they were almost there. And then they were there. Life was good in Haran, but something was missing. Abram and Sarai had no children, but even more than that, something was missing. One night, they were out looking at the expanse of the desert, and God came so close, and they came so close to God, that they knew what God was saying. Go to a new land that I will show you. I'm going to bless you and make you a blessing, so that you will have so many children and so many grandchildren, they will number more than the grains of sand in the desert. So they did. They set out, this time away from the rivers, leaving much of their family in Haran, but again taking their helpers and their animals. Again, it was a very long journey. In time, they came to a place called Shechem. And there they climbed a hill and prayed to God, and God was there in that place. So they built an altar to mark that place where God was. They continued their journey and came to a place called Bethel. And they prayed to God there, and God was there in that place. So they built an altar there. And it was then that they realized that God was not just in this place or that place or here or there, but that all of God was in every place. They continued their journey and found a new home in a place called Hebron by the oaks of Mamre. For a while there wasn't enough food and they went all the way to Egypt, but they came back and found a home in Hebron. Abram and Sarai were now getting very old and they still had no children. One night they were outside and again God came so close to them. And they came so close to God that again they knew what God was saying. Look, look at the stars. Do you see there are so many of them, you can't even begin to count them. That's how many children and grandchildren. Abraham just laughed. They were now very old. But they changed their names anyway. Abram changed his name to Abraham, and Sarai changed her name to Sarah, because they would be the father and mother of many. One day, three strangers came out of the desert, and as was the custom, they invited them in and fed them. And then they gave them a message. The strangers said, "Soon you are going to have a baby." This time Sarah laughed. She was now way past the age when women could have babies. But the strangers left, and you know what? It did. It happened. They had a baby. And they laughed again. In fact, they named their baby Laughter, which in their language is Isaac. Isaac grew to be a strong young man. Sarah, now a very old woman, died and was buried in the cave of Machpelah by the oaks of Mamre. Abraham was very sad. He had lived with Sarah and loved her for so many years. But he still had something very important to do. He called his most trusted helper and said, "I want you to go back to Haran and find a wife for Isaac." So the most trusted helper left with other helpers and animals and gifts and made that long journey back. And it was at a well outside of Haran that he met Rebekah, a woman who was as full of kindness as she was courage. She invited him home and gave water to all of the animals out of the well. The helper told her family about the great family that was to be, about Abraham and Sarah, and asked if she could come and be a part. They said yes, and she said yes, and they made that long journey back. Past Shechem, past Bethel. And one evening, Isaac was out in the fields meditating and lifted up his eyes, saw them coming and came out to meet them. And he took Rebekah into his mother's tent and they were married. Abraham, now a very old man, died and was gathered to God and to his people and buried next to Sarah in the cave of Machpelah. And then Isaac and Rebekah had children, and those children grew up and they had children, and those children grew up and they had children, and those children had children, and those children had children, and well, this just kept going on until your grandparents were born, And then your parents were born. And then you were born. And now you. You are a part of that great family. A branch on that tree of many branches. And then what we do is we ask some questions, and I'd like you to respond. I'd really like this to be something we do together. The first question we always ask is, I wonder what part of this story you like the best. That is such a safe question. There is no right or wrong. I like to tell sometimes about the story of somebody in Sunday school who was asked the question, and he's thinking, well, it's gray and bushy, has a bushy tail, climbs trees and eats nuts. Sounds like this answer is a squirrel, but I'm in church, so the answer must be either Jesus or love. This is an honest question. I wonder what part of this story you like the best. What was your favorite part? And would some of you respond, what was your favorite part of this story?
When Sarah laughed.
Isn't humor an important part of life? Yes. What else? Some others. They took a risk and left the life that was familiar to them. A couple more. Your favorite part. Wherever they went, God was with them. The building of the altars. I often wonder what our contemporary similar thing is. How do we build altars? What is it? What is? Somebody said tattoos. I don't know, maybe. The next question, again, it's a safe question. No right or wrong answer. I wonder what part of the story is the most important part. I think sometimes we start with, what do you like? And then, what's the most important part? But again, what's important for you is going to be totally different than what's important for you. So a couple of you, please respond to that one. What part of this is the most important part of the story? The fact that Abraham did have that many children, even though from all appearances when he died, I'm not sure how well he thought that promise was being fulfilled. Sometimes it's answered in ways that we have no idea, isn't it? Yes. They took that first step and left that original town. All of God was everywhere. Back in the back. They never gave up. And if we had time, we could keep on going, but I just wanted to sort of model for you what we do in godly play. We simply give access to these timeless stories. Stories that people have used for thousands of years. This story, the story of journeying, the story of leaving a place that's familiar, of wondering where God is going to be. There are so many entry points in here. It's interesting, often when I say, I wonder what part of this story you like the best, children often choose that place where Abraham and Sarah died. I know there was a little boy, Eddie, whose grandfather had died. And during the response time after this story, we invite children to choose their own work. We don't prescribe what it is. There's just a variety of choices for them. But little Eddie would get all this basket of people of God and bury them in the sand and then say, Carol, they're not here. And I'd say, where are they, Eddie? He'd say, they died. And then he'd dig them all up. I think for that little three-year-old, that was his work. That was what he needed to be able to process that. And that's what we believe giving these children these stories is about, is a way to really wrestle with and really make meaning out of what life is all about. Your community is really looking to possibly expand godly play. And while it is for children, it is every bit as much for the adults who work with children. I mean, look at the way that we were able to just participate in this story. I just would encourage you, there's a little response card in your bulletin, to say I'm interested in just finding out more about this, a way that you possibly could maybe be involved in this way of being with children. But again, as much as it is about being with children, this is as much about your own deep spirituality and your own coming close and experiencing God. Thank you.
I often ask myself what we have to offer in church these days.